Hi, I'm Christian McBride, guest host today on Piano Jazz. With me is Ted Nash. He is a virtuoso saxophonist and clarinetist and a member of the Jazz and Lincoln Center Orchestra. He's brought along a few tunes inspired by some of the great visual artists, including Monet, Van Gogh, and Picasso. Ted, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Good to be here.
Ted, I've been digging you from the distance for quite some time, and it amazes me. This is our first time ever really getting to sit down and talk.
And hang out, I know.
And make music. How exciting is that?
I'm very excited. Definitely.
This project of yours, tell me a little bit about it. It sounds incredible. Portrait in Seven Shades.
Yeah, it was several years ago, actually. Wynton Marsalis, who's the artistic director of Jazz at Lincoln Center, came up to me. We were on tour. We were in Mexico, I think. And he said, hey, man, you know, we want to do a feature piece of yours, something, a long-form piece that we want to commission, something that we could play in a couple of years at one of our concert series. And I said, well, cool, man. Yeah, I'm down. And he said, but think about some kind of theme, you know, something that's going to be, you know, not only just something that we can, like a theme that we can deal with, but also something that would inspire you. So it didn't take me long. I think I spent a couple of days just thinking about different things. And I just came up with the idea of artists. I've always loved fine art and great artists and paintings. I mean, ever since I've been, you know, in New York, I've been going to museums and checking it out. So that was really how it all started.
Yeah, and knowing your background, it runs in the family, huh? You were born in Los Angeles, right? Mm-hmm. And I know you and I have some similarities in that both your father and your uncle were also pros.
That's right. My father, Dick Nash, is a trombonist.
Yes.
Excellent trombonist. And my namesake uncle, Ted Nash, they were both came out of the big band era, great jazz musicians, but settled in the studios in Los Angeles, made great livings doing that. And so I grew up in an environment of not only just hearing great music, but of complete support of what I wanted to do.
Tell me about some of your earliest memories of, like, you know, did you go to sessions with them and check out the scene? And I'm sure you probably got a chance to meet a whole lot of great stars.
Yeah, we used to have parties at the house, and people would come over, like Sonny Criss would come over to the house and play, and Andy Simpkins.
You love Andy. Good old Uncle Andy.
Oh, my God. So we had, you know, we had these great parties at the house since I can remember, you know, 6, 8 years old. But as I started to play, and I started the clarinet at 12, my father used to drag me down to the sessions. Mm-hmm. It could be Quincy Jones. It could be TV stuff like Mod Squads. I'd sit right behind my uncle, and my uncle was so cool, too, man. Yeah. He would, like, you know, he was just an amazing musician, and he'd just be like, all right, you know, he's reading, you know, looking at the music and counting the bars, and then he'd come in on his just heart-wrenching, beautiful solo, you know, with the guy dying in the scene and all that. You know, how they used to project those images across the screen. I would sit there and listen to him play, and then he'd put his horn down like it was just all in the day's work, but it was so beautiful.
You know? Right. Talk about the differences in playing in a section, because it seems to be somewhat of a lost art about, you know, playing in a section, playing music for a particular function as opposed to just taking a killing solo. You know what I mean? Like guys who just go to jam sessions and play versus playing in a band at a studio for a session for a movie or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's certainly an art to that. And that's why those guys were masters at doing that kind of work and doing all the film score work and the TV and all of that. I mean, you know, they did come out of playing in the big bands. That was That's how people learn, man. That's how they cut their teeth, was out there in the big bands touring, and all you did was learn how to play with other people.
Like,
you know, you got your place to play a little solo. But it seems like today, I mean, even the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra is not coming, it's not put together by a bunch of musicians who had that kind of experience.
Right.
It's like you said, it's soloists, people who've been in a lot of jam sessions, maybe have their own careers as soloists, and put it together in a big band. So there's a different kind of sensibility. We all have to learn how to listen in a new way. It doesn't come from that kind of experience that we had growing up.
Yeah, I listened to the Basie Band at any point in its evolution, and you listen to these 15 guys like breathing together. Sounds like one person.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
And I thought, man, that doesn't happen quite as often or as easily as it did at that time.
Yeah, right.
But I want to play some music, man. I want to play some of your music. The first song we have lined up today comes from Portrait in Seven Shades, and we're going to deal with the great French artist Henri Matisse, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, how does he make you feel?
Well, first of all, one of his most iconic images at the Museum of Modern Art is one that shows these five women dancing. And yeah. They've got their hands connected, and they're just, it's like, you know, there's nothing wrong, man. It's just dance, right. Have a good time. So it's about swing, it's about feeling good.
Yeah.
So that movement really represented that kind of feeling of just, of dancing and a nice groove. And Henri Matisse, you know, it's just, he's a master of color and shapes.
Yeah.
So the piece was kind of dealing with that too, with the shapes.
Now, we have a special guest joining us today as well. He's going to play a little piano. Want to tell us who it is?
Well, he's my buddy, and he's someone I've been playing with for well over 20 years, Frank Kimbrough, who's just a great pianist.
And my man. We're going to get on down with the three of us for Matisse.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Ted, that was beautiful.
Oh, man. It's good to play with you.
Now, since you have these great musicians in your family, you also experienced your first professional experience very young, right? How old were you when you first started gigging?
16. Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, my father was working with...
And you were only 12 when you started, right?
I mean, I took piano lessons when I was 7, 8 years old in classical piano, and I was kind of doing that until I discovered the clarinet. It was at summer camp, and some kid had one, and he brought it out of the box and started playing these little melodies, and I was like, man, you can't bring a piano to summer camp, you know? So I just, started playing the reeds, but I worked really hard. I mean, I practiced every day after school, and I was studying with a guy named Charlie Shoemake, who's a vibes player.
Yes.
He played with George Shearing's group, and he had this whole method of teaching jazz. It was really like learning the vocabulary. And by the time I was 16, I was doing gigs with him. And then I did a gig with Lionel Hampton. We went to Hawaii for a week. And then Quincy Jones. Quincy hired me to do a tour. I ended up not doing the tour because they didn't know how old I was.
Wow.
And when the lawyers came around and they said, yeah, we need to get all your vitals for the
W-9 and all that stuff, right?
And they said, hey, wait a minute, you're 16 years old. I said, yeah, And they said, well, this is a corporation and you're supposed to be 18 to work for us and we have to hire a guardian. And then Quincy wanted to adopt me.
Wow.
And they said, man, it's too much trouble. So they got somebody to take my place. But those were the first things I was doing when I was 16.
And what year would this have been?
Late 70s, I was really coming out and playing. I moved to New York in 78.
That's fantastic. So did you stay in Gates' band for, that's Lionel Hampton for the hip impaired. Sorry.
I had the greatest time, man, with Gates. I mean, he was crazy, but I mean, that whole week in Hawaii and just playing bebop every night and swinging. And I mean, I felt like I'd been, reborn and I was, it was just, and then I moved to New York and then they did call me several years later, and at that point I just I didn't really feel like going out with him and doing that thing because I was on to some other kinds of things that I was involved with, like Mel Lewis band. And
right now, when did you hook up with Mel, like immediately once you came to New York? Or
well, Mel and my father were roommates in the Tex Beneke band. We're talking about the big bands, right? And so they were like 51 or whatever. That was 1951, I think. They were roommates, but so Mel said, hey, come on over to my house. And, he played me about 20 of his own records. And that's how he was, man. He was so much fun. So he said, yeah, you got to start playing with a band, So Dick Oates started to send me down. And I joined the band in 80 or 81 and played for 10 years.
Wow.
I was sitting between Dick Oates and Joe Lovano for 10 years.
Can't go wrong there.
I mean, talk about learning.
Whole lot of fire.
Yeah.
There's more music in a minute with Ted Nash and our special guest pianist, Frank Kimbrough. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Christian McBride, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and friends. Now, one thing I've always been, that's always fascinated me about you is when I really became familiar with you was through Winton and the Lincoln Center Band. And then I remember hearing you on the radio once. I think it was your band, Odeon.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so vastly different from what I'd heard you do with the Lincoln Center Band. And right away, I thought, this is my kind of cat. He's schizophrenic, just like me. Now, talk about, obviously you have your father and your uncle, but obviously you have some influences coming from some different places other than just the traditional jazz and big band set.
Well, it's kind of funny because I felt like I was always very traditional, almost with blinders on for a long time when I was younger. Like, I just wanted to play bebop. I just want to play standard tunes.
Right.
And I started to write a little bit, but it wasn't until I actually had a lot to do with joining the Jazz Composers Collective, which is a group that Frank Kimbrough and I and Ben Allison, who really kind of spearheaded the whole idea of it. We put that together back over 15 years ago now. And what we would do is we would force ourselves to write new music, because every year or a couple
of times. That's so important.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's like, you have your concert March 30th. What are you going to do?
Right.
Come up with some new stuff, you know?
Right.
Come up with not only new ways of writing music, but maybe some new orchestrations, new groups, new... So I came up with that. Man, let me put together a band of a bunch of instruments that I don't like. So I started writing.
And make yourself get into
it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm sort of kidding, but it really was like the accordion and the violin.
Mm.
And let me play the clarinet, you know, since that's a hard instrument to play.
Right.
And then I got tuba instead of a bass. So I kind of put together a collection of all these instruments that I didn't know much about and how to write for them and how to put them together. And then I started to listen to a lot of music. I listened to a lot of tango music for the accordion and violin. I suddenly realized that I love tango music. I love different kinds of music. And it just started to make me uncover a lot more that I didn't know about different cultures and musics around the world.
Right, right. And speaking once again of Frank Kimbrough, who... he certainly is one of the great musicians of our time as well.
Yeah, unbelievable pianist and composer.
Yes, yes. Did you start composing around the same time as you started learning how to improvise? I mean, did you kind of learn both skills simultaneously?
My first composition I wrote when I was 15, and it's called Tristamente. And then Louis Bellson. I did a record with him with Blue Mitchell on trumpet.
Wow.
A year before Blue passed away, and we recorded that. So it came out on record. That was my first composition. So I've been doing it since I was kind of playing, but again, it wasn't until several years later that I started to really focus on broadening my whole way of composing.
Right. And you have another project that I heard on the radio for the first time, the Mancini Project. And talk about what Mancini means to you personally.
Well, Mancini, of course, is a great film composer that was based in Los Angeles. My father and my uncle, who we mentioned, were both mainstays in his band. I mean, they did all the recordings throughout the 50s, 60s, 70s, even into the 80s. So I grew up hearing that music. And I even, you know, met Hank a couple of times, and he's been in our parties and that kind of thing. So, I mean, I think the very first music that I ever heard that I really got turned on from was the Pink Panther
and
The Great Race, which was a real corny movie that just featured my father all the way through with a different solos.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's my memory of growing up with that kind of music. So Henry Mancini it's a very personal kind of tribute, as well as being an important, you know, person and composer to deal with.
I never got to meet him, but I certainly feel like I know him through Jenny, his wife, and Jack Elliott, who I'm sure you probably knew very well.
Mm-hmm.
You picked a song today that it should be a standard, because it's weird, because it's one of these songs that not a lot of people play, but mm-hmm. a lot of people know it, and they know it's a great song, Two for the Road.
It's a beautiful tune, and I understand it was, of all the music that he wrote, it was his favorite piece.
Yeah, and it should be. I can understand why you would think that. Why don't we play a little taste?
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Ted, that was gorgeous.
Man, thank you for that music.
Wow, you sang so eloquently on that, and Frank Kimbrough just laying down the pad for us. Mm, beautiful. I want to ask you, as a prolific arranger and composer such as yourself, you mentioned film music earlier and how much that meant to you. Are there any particular films, like, does it happen with you sometimes where you can't actually concentrate on the film because you're listening to the music too much? Like, what particular films have, and its music, touched you deeply?
Well, it's funny because when you listen to a good film score, you shouldn't be that much paying attention to it.
Right.
It should
right.
actually be supporting
right.
it. So some people will overwrite, and just this, because they have such great orchestrational chops, you know, they'll put yeah. everything they know into the orchestration and stuff. And then I do get caught up listening to it. There's a composer named James Horner. Mm. Now, my best friend in high school is a guy named Randy Kerber, and he is not that well known as a household name. He's a studio pianist, and he became the chief orchestrator for all of James Horner's films
wow.
for a period of time. And he did, if you ever saw the movie Beautiful Mind.
Yes.
Well, that's Randy.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
He's such a brilliant, and so that's the kind of thing. It's like when I listen to that music, there's the lushness of the orchestra. There's just a creative way of taking things and finding new instruments and different ways of expressing something that the movie, you know, ways of expressing what's going on in the movie. And I think that's what was also very fun for me when I did the Portrait in Seven Shades piece, because I was dealing with imagery,
right,
and having
right.
to think of a way to reinterpret these images, also iconic images that people are very familiar with, Picasso and all
right.
of that. So that's what I think film score composers deal with a lot, is how to interpret what they're seeing on the screen and make it I wouldn't say better, but fuller and deeper and richer experience for the people who are watching it.
That's a perfect segue into playing another song of yours from Portrait in Seven Shades. How about we play the piece that is dedicated to Monet?
That'd be great. Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right.
Thank you. Ted, one thing that puzzles me sometimes about modern music, sometimes a simple melody and simple beauty gets overlooked as something being old-fashioned. But thank you for proving the point that that's not the case.
Thanks.
That's a beautiful, beautiful piece of music. Great melody, great changes, nice, but it's still very modern, very, very hip. You know, nothing old-fashioned about it.
Well, it's interesting because to extract just the main theme and the chords right there and just play it the way we did it, it felt like just a tune, you know.
Right.
But in the orchestra, the thing that I wrote for the full orchestra has all these other sections in it and a development that's very kind of modern and and has some other kinds of harmonic stuff that I'm dealing with. So I almost felt disappointed when I thought about in advance to just extract that melody, but then just now playing it with you like that. It was the first time I've done that, and it just it felt so great.
It felt very, very good.
Thanks, man.
I'm having a great time with Ted Nash, and we'll have more music in a minute. You can find artist info, set lists, and more at our website, pianojazz.npr.org. I'm Christian McBride, sitting in for Mary McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. For our next song, you picked a really, really good one. We're going to go back to the Mancini book here for a second. We're going to pay a little tribute to Audrey Hepburn and George Peppard.
That's right.
A little Breakfast at Tiffany's, huh? A little Holly Golightly.
Oh, yeah, Holly Golightly. Well, this is the actual theme of the movie. Even though Moon River became the hit,
right?
This is the main theme, and it's not quite as known as the other, but it's such a swinging great tune.
I can't wait. We're going to bring Frank Kimbrough back and get down with some breakfast at Tiffany's. Thank you. Breakfast at Tiffany's. That was a nice thing to do, Ted. Get in there and swing a little taste.
You know.
And Frank boiling the pots over there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about growing up in Los Angeles. For a long time, I'm not sure if that stigma still exists today, but remember there used to be this whole kind of L.A. versus New York, this West Coast, East Coast thing, kind of, well, the cats in L.A. kind of sort of play hard, but the cats in New York got the real grit and the real fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear that a lot growing up?
Well, you know, yeah, I did, but it wasn't just a matter of reputation. I felt that that was real to some degree because I grew up in L.A., so certainly I was in one of the big cities and in a place certainly to make music and be with musicians, and I felt drawn to New York, and it was because of the fire and the and all of that. There's a certain aggressive, more kind of energetic style of playing that is certainly attractive to somebody who's young, and you know,
sure.
I mean, I like that whole post Coltrane kind of vibe that was happening in the 70s with Liebman and all of them. You know, I mean, just like there was a certain vibe. And West Coast had such great musicians, but I think it was a cooler approach to playing. You think about, you know, Art Pepper and Shelly Manne and some of these cats. I mean, Sonny Criss, who was probably kind of like that New York style, but he was a little cooler. He had that bird thing, but you know, he was somebody I certainly represented that whole kind of bebop thing, but was an LA based musician. I definitely felt that there was a difference between the two. I chose to follow my heart. A lot of people said, "Man, are you crazy? I mean, you've got a career in the studios. You could be making a ton of money.
Right.
You know, why are you leaving that? It's just being handed over to you." And I was like, well, I'm 18. I just want to go do what I want to do.
And I it's safe to assume that once you got to New York, you fell right in like a fish to water, huh?
No, man. Actually, when I came to New York, I was a little more confident than maybe I should have been. Because like in L.A., everything was just unfolding right in front of me. It was like, oh, yeah, man. You know, people were writing articles, and Don Ellis, I was playing with his band and different people, and they just were. And I came to New York, and they were like, you see that line going around the corner?
You had to start all over again, right?
Get in the back of it, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, not only did it kind of kick me in the rear in terms of that, I mean, just thinking that I was ready, which I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of put me back into the woodshed a little bit, but also I had to develop a little more patience and get the momentum going again. I think it really took me a lot of years to kind of get back that momentum again. Mm. And I don't regret leaving L.A.
Yeah,
I'd be a lot more rich than I am right now. But I'm very happy.
There's more to come with Ted Nash and Frank Kimbrough. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. I'm Christian McBride, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and Friends. I want to talk to you a little bit about arranging. You've had so much experience in arranging for the Lincoln Center Band and playing the music of so many great arrangers. Was it for you the same as it was for me? Because I remember when I first started taking stabs at writing for big band, thanks to Wynton, I had no idea what to do. So I'm calling all these different guys. I called Jerry Dodgen. You know, I started working a lot with Lalo Schifrin, and John Clayton. I'm asking all these great arrangers for tips.
Mm-hmm.
And the general sense was, well, you could do this, but you could do it like this. Or you could do it like this. Or you could do it like this.
Like, thanks a lot.
Exactly. So I'm walking away going, I feel like I learned nothing.
Right. And you learned everything.
I remember John Clayton sent me one of his scores, and I just kind of studied it and said, okay, B flat 13 can be voiced like that. And you know, I said, John, is it okay if I like blatantly rip this off from you? He's like, man, how do you think we all learn how to arrange? You know?
Well, you know, sitting in the Mel Lewis band, even though Thad had left the band, Thad Jones, who's one of the greatest big band arrangers of all time, we played his music probably 70 or 80% of what we played at the Vanguard every Monday and on tour was a Thad Jones, you know, composition and arrangement. Bob Brookmeyer did a lot of the arranging for the band, too. And Jerry Dodgen
did. Kids are pretty people, too.
Oh, my God. You know, all this stuff is so beautiful. And I think sitting in a band, playing it every night was what helped me to hear certain things. And
right.
I studied some of Thad Jones. I would say, yeah, in terms of orchestration, he was probably my first real true hero.
Yeah, the double diminished.
Exactly.
I remember the first time I played 3-in-1, the great Thad Jones piece, just like hearing the way he would harmonize a
do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do
used.
And what was amazing about that, apparently he wouldn't sit there, write out a score, and then copy the parts out. He would just start trumpet one, take this paper, and just start writing from his head.
Right.
Entire arrangement like that. Which
that's
is,
crazy, man.
That's like some genius.
Right.
You know? Really.
Well, Ted, you know, it's amazing that you, out of a very few, have all of those skills, you know. Great instrumentalist, great improviser, great arranger, great composer. You got the whole gamut covered, my man.
Oh, man, thanks. I mean, I feel so blessed to have found what it is I love to do. I mean, I think about people who are out there struggling, trying to figure out what it is they love to do.
Yeah.
And it's like you
That's
and me,
more than half the battle.
Man, just knowing.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm very lucky to have been in a musical household and family that not only showed me how great it is to have a lifestyle based on playing and doing what you love to do.
Right.
But helped expose me to music at a very early age. So, no, I feel very blessed. And, you know, I know you must feel the same way.
Absolutely. Hey, man, I feel lucky to finally sit here and converse with you for
you
the
did.
First time in God knows how long.
Man, I love playing with you. You're a lot of fun to play with.
Oh, ditto, my man. Why don't we play one more? Take it on home with some more Mancini.
That's great.
And which one are we going to play now?
I'm thinking Lujan, which
is... I don't know this one.
Oh, you're going to know it. And it's also known as Slow Hot Wind.
Uh-huh.
I think Brazil 66 did a version of it in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful tune, one of his greatest tunes.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
that piece is absolutely gorgeous. I'll never forget that.
Isn't it?
Man, I can't tell you what a thrill it was to play with you today. And also to have Frank Kimbrough on the show with us to put those beautiful pads behind us.
It's been a real pleasure to be with you.
Look forward to the next time, Ted. Thank you, Chris, for joining us.
You've been listening to Marian McPartland's Piano Jazz with guest host Christian McBride and today's guest, Ted Nash. Join us each week at this time when Piano Jazz brings you outstanding artists for conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson. Recording engineer, Duke Marcos. Mastering engineer, David Mitchell. Production assistant, Grant Jackson. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. Special thanks to Rob McCumber and SiriusXM Studios in New York City. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To find out more about the artists and music selections heard on Piano Jazz, or to listen to a recent program, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. There you'll find a link to our free weekly preview podcast, Piano Jazz Shorts. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.